Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:34 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is August 30th. Thought we'd kick off with oil because yesterday it was looking really quite encouraging, and today it's down nearly $6. So that's a countermanding downward dynamic and confirms the sequence of lower rally highs. So we give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic that was up yesterday. It's down today, and it's just another example of just how whippy this market is. And this is still a very delicate environment. We have this, I think, competing views. For example, when we look at oil, it's about supply and demand. So there's the potential that more supply will reach market because of negotiations with Iran. And just as an example of how volatile Iran can be, the violence seen overnight in Iraq is just further evidence of the extraterritorial reach of the Iranian regime. But nonetheless, oil prices came down. And there is obviously the other side of the equation in terms of demand. So investors, I think, woke up to the potential, or perhaps the reality, that we're looking at the real threat of a recession. Now, let's just pull out and look at this on a weekly basis. We have a significant loss of uptrend consistency. We had a clear acceleration higher. Earlier this year, we've had a period of right-hand extension. Now the price is back below $100. And this continues to look rather bearish. It was looking much better yesterday, and that has really been turned around now. I'm kind of reminded of Maynard Keynes. What do when the facts change? Well, of course, we could have another upward dynamic tomorrow, and it would look a bit more encouraging, but it's certainly for the bulls to prove here. And what we're also seeing is other key commodities rolling over. So, copper prices followed through on the downside today. And this is resistance in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. I think it's also particularly relevant to look at the 50-cent rallies that we've had. So we've had a little bit more than a 50-cent rally on this occasion, but we are now seeing resistance in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So there's been a great deal of enthusiasm in the mining sector. Lots of miners have been very eager to say that there has to be a massive new investment cycle in the mining industry, that at least 50 new mines for lithium need to be built if we're going to come even close to reaching the production needs of the EV sector. But the industrial metal miners are rolling over, and Rio Tinto is back in the region of the lower side of its range. BHP Billiton had done especially well because it also has some energy, but it's now pulling back from that 2,500p level. Then a significant number of the energy companies have been among the best performers this year. So, Shell, for example, has come up from 1,000 to almost 2,500 in the space of 2 years. And we're back in the region of the all-time peaks. So, completely unwinding the massive decline that we saw during the worst of the pandemic panic. And then let's just think about the energy ETF in the USA. It's done spectacularly well. It's been among the best performers for 2 years in a row. And this is against a background where the S&P 500 hasn't really been firing for most of the last year. And it's also extending its decline from the region of the 200-day moving average. So the one sector that has really helped to pad out performance in the equity markets has been energy. And now oil prices look susceptible to some additional weakness. But of course, it hasn't been oil that's been making the headlines, it's natural gas. But natural gas prices are coming back down. And Henry Hub is steady here around the $9 area. But Dutch gas was down heavy yesterday and down heavy again in here today. So this is a peak of at least near-term significance, and potentially it's a medium-term peak. When we look at UK gas, then it's also coming back in a really dynamic manner. So what we've seen here is that there's been indiscriminate buying, and this has successfully filled up the reserves of European countries. So the EU as a whole has reached its end of November target of 80% full. And that indiscriminate buying is probably now over because they don't need to accelerate the buying. They can just moderate their buying and be a little bit more sensitive to pricing. And that suggests more volatility in natural gas prices. But that also removes one of the biggest growth factors in inflationary pressures. We have to also remember that a large number of companies have had to shut down operations because of this exceptionally high price of natural gas. Now, I don't believe it's going to collapse. And I certainly don't think we're going to see it back below the 100 level, 100 pound level anytime soon. But a collapse from 600 to 100 would be a phenomenal decline, and it would moderate a lot of the inflationary pressures. Now, of course, we have other factors that are coming into play right now, most particularly that the inflation has lasted long enough and been sufficiently large that it's going to start affecting index-linked payments, whether those are through Social Security, through pensions, utility bills, even phone tariffs. These are all index-linked, particularly in the UK, but this is also going to represent a significant factor for the USA. And of course, that means it's going to be problematic for governments. So we continue to see that bond yields are pushing higher. So the gilt yield was at a new recovery high in here today and popping on the upside up over 10 basis points. Didn't quite hold all of that move, but certainly still really very strong and nothing in the way of downward dynamics just yet, even if we do have a sharply oversold condition on the price. And the 10-year yield is up now to 3.1%. We had one Fed governor today coming out and saying that interest rates will have to get up to 3.5% in the USA and stay there for all of, or at least until 2024 to try and get inflation under control. And I would consider that to be rather bullish for markets, that we only have 100 basis points of risk in the Fed funds rate. But we're probably going to have a recession well before 2024. So this is obviously a very contentious issue that we are looking at the potential for slowing economic growth. Now, one of the other potential reasons, or I think important factors, is copper and Chinese demand. So China, it's well, at least it has started raining in China, and copper is rolling over, and they've set the party congress date for the middle of October, and there are COVID cases in every province right now. So that suggests much tighter control, much greater focus on the COVID zero policy, a lot more lockdowns, less economic activity, which is going to weigh on copper, and this is also weighing on the stock market. We saw that Country Garden reported earnings today, and their profit was down something like 96 or 98%. And The share was down a few percent. It's priced in a lot of the bad news already. Prices are down from $18 in 2018 to about $2 right now. So there is obviously still significant downward pressure on the market, and certainly also scope for additional weakness, because there is no real sign of support coming through from the government for the property sector. They're certainly producing, they're certainly making more money available, but the renminbi is trending down. So they're supplying some money, but they're not supplying as much as they could, because they don't want the renminbi to accelerate lower. And they certainly don't want it trending significantly down through 720. But it is likely we're going to get to 720. And slower growth in China is obviously a really significant factor for commodity prices. So it's, in one way, likely to moderate some of the inflationary pressures, because the weakness in the currency and the weakness in the economy is going to take some of the impetus out of commodity prices globally. And that will help to moderate some of the selling pressure in China. So if we think, for example, about the industrial sector, it was actually in positive territory today. Now, it was well off the intraday high, but that doesn't mean, and certainly it could fall again tomorrow. But the important thing is that the industrials in Europe have actually held up reasonably well, that they're not at new lows. They haven't taken out the July low. And the euro is still right in the region of parity. And it was in mildly positive territory in here today. Now, we're not seeing dynamic moves. And there's a huge consensus that Europe is going to be both cold and hungry this winter. But with natural gas prices starting to come down, then I think perhaps people have been a bit too bearish. That suggests that the euro could rally from here. But the USA is going to continue to raise interest rates and probably do it faster than the EU. And therefore, we might see some steadier action. But a clear break in the sequence of lower rally highs will be required to question the consistency of the downtrend overall. Now let's just spread out and look at other markets. We continue to see that the semiconductor index is under pressure, and the Taiwanese market is trending down. So we have a type 2 top formation and a downtrend still in play. And this is equally true for the wider semiconductor index. So this was among the best performers from 2020 all the way through to early 2022, and now this trend is over. Then we should pay attention to some of the largest companies in the world. Apple continues to extend its decline. I remain very much of the view that this is a highly cyclical company. There's a 3-year cycle in iPhone sales, and they were massively inflated by the pandemic. It means that the replacement cycle is going to be more influential in future, not less. So there's obvious scope for significant downside here. When we think about Tesla, well, they've had a problem with one, the price of their vehicles. They've been raising prices aggressively. They're now talking about charging an extra $5,000 for their self-driving functionality. And by any stretch of the imagination, that's aggressive pricing since it doesn't work. But of course, it's on the promise that it will work. And the entire valuation of the company is based upon that promise. If it doesn't work, well, then they're just selling pricey electric vehicles. And the share is rolling over once more from the 300 level, and it's back below the 200-day moving average. Perhaps more importantly, it's lost uptrend consistency and it's back inside the previous peaks. We saw Bitcoin selling off by about $500 in early trading. Then it recouped that decline and was only down about $100 about half an hour ago. Now it's starting to roll back over again. So this is a liquidity barometer, and it's continuing to trend downwards. So we continue to see that there is liquidity getting siphoned out of the market. One thing that has come up in conversations recently is the size of the Fed's balance sheet, because it really hasn't contracted by all that much. It peaked in March of this year just below 9 trillion, and it's still at 8.85. But they've been selling off 40 billion a month, so why hasn't it come down more? Well, a good part of the reason for that is because the tax receipts have been so high. There hasn't been a drawdown from the Fed by the Treasury. Now, that's not going to last indefinitely, but it is helping to moderate the influence of quantitative tightening. But that pace of quantitative tightening is going to accelerate next month, and then there will also be a demand from the federal government as we go through the balance of the year. So we will see more of an effect from quantitative tightening as times go on. It is a cumulative headwind for growth. And then let's also just pay attention to high yield spreads. Well, high yield bonds first. And the bond ETF continues to trend downwards, clearly experiencing resistance or encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average 3 weeks ago. Now let's just pay attention then to the high yield spread, which is not updated real time. So this is yesterday's value, but we're back above 500 basis points. And I do think of 500 basis points as the psychological Rubicon. The most important thing is that this index can move fast. So it isn't updated in real time, but when it's updated, then you can turn it, you can look at it the next morning and it will have moved a lot. The most important thing is the trend. There's still a sequence of higher reaction lows, and therefore we have to give the benefit of the doubt to additional upside. We still have an inverted yield curve. We have high yield spreads that are rising and oil prices that potentially now are rolling over. So this is all pointing towards much slower growth. And this might have been the entire rationale behind the Russian invasion of Ukraine in the first place. They probably thought that the West was completely hooked on liquidity, and all they had to do was cut off energy, create an energy crisis, and tip the rest of the world into a recession. And by doing that, they might get what they want. Well, so far, that strategy is working reasonably well. And obviously, there's clear risks on the downside. The one sector that is doing well right now is uranium. And the uranium ETF was in positive territory in here today. But it's being led by some of the uranium miners. So, Denison Mines, for example, was up in a dynamic manner for the last 2 days. Then, the technology side of the uranium sector was down heavily in here today. NuScale pulled back in a very violent manner. So, very much responding to the tighter liquidity conditions. So, that's also translating into less demand for solar panels. And First Solar pulled back in a rather violent manner in here today. That doesn't mean that they won't recover. And there's certainly a lot of benefit that these types of companies are going to glean from the Inflation Reduction Act. But there was a rush to price that in. Now I think we're probably due some consolidation overall. Then I was just reading an article, I'll post it tomorrow, about the repercussions of the Tonga volcano earlier on this year, where it's resulted in a much cooler environment in the southern hemisphere. So wheat prices rebounded yesterday, gave up a lot of that advance in here today. Soybeans have also rebounded, but then were off yesterday and just off their lows in here today. There was a lot of enthusiasm in the media last week about, and the last couple of weeks about cotton, but prices were down in a dynamic manner in here today as well. And one thing that I've certainly noticed, and I've certainly experienced, that long periods with no rain often end with lots of rain. We had that here where 10 inches fell in the space of 24 hours about 10 days ago. And the similar thing is now happening in Sichuan in China. And these droughts that have heavily curtailed prices do appear to be ending. Now, of course, floods can also damage crops. So we could be in for quite a bit of volatility. But the most water-intense crops generally tend to like excessive water, and that could control some of the inflationary pressures that we've seen in the wider commodity complex as well. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.